content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Anna Kogal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from Do You Know What Day Tomorrow Is? And Glamour's July edition. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at KiwanisFoundation.org. Well, welcome back, everyone. It is Thursday evening, 10 p.m., July 12th, middle of summer. Woohoo! Good going here, I hope. All right. Well, we have got a feature story on Anne Hathaway in July's edition of Glamour. And it's got a big capital A on it with parts of the A kind of missing, like almost bitten into. And underneath that it says, Anne Hathaway isn't angry anymore. After being criticized, scrutinized, even hated, she put up a few walls to protect herself. Now the Ocean's 8 star is ready to tear them down. By Justine Harmon, and we will begin. There aren't many spots like Café Luxembourg in New York City. It's the kind of place where well-worn bar stools and hang-your-own-coat racks add to its sophistication. The kind of place where you can have too many glasses of wine at lunch. Where you can tell the hostess you are meeting Anne Hathaway. And she'll shrug and say, oh, she's been here a million times. The whole vibe is high-end casual, left bank meets Upper West Side. And indeed, when Hathaway walks in, there is no noticeable change in the room. No one cranes their neck or pulls out an iPhone. Maybe the other patrons have seen the Oscar winner here a million times. Or maybe everyone is French. In the 5 years since hashtag HathaHate, the 2013 media storm that erupted after Hathaway won the Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her turn as Fantine in Les Misérables, and was deemed too earnest, too jazz hands, too something, the 35-year-old has emerged with a simple realization. It doesn't matter whether people like her, because she really likes herself. I'm interested in living a very honest life. I don't know if that makes me a boring person. I don't really care if it does, she says after we debate the merits of the Côte de Provence versus Organic Rosé. It would be easier if I was better at being misleading or sneaky. I know how all that stuff works. I'm not a naive idiot. I know if I was a little bit mean to everybody, people would be like, oh, she's fun. I like her. Come have a drink. And I'm just like, can we have a drink and not try to tear each other apart? Anne, or Annie, as she tells me to call her, was born in Brooklyn. When she was 6, her parents, Gerald, a labor attorney, and Kate, a former actress, moved the family to Millburn, New Jersey. She has 2 brothers, one whom is gay, which is why the once devout Roman Catholic Hathaways converted to Episcopalianism. Owning your own truth became something of a family motto. When I was a teenager and life was starting to happen, my dad said to me, 3 promises. Don't get a tattoo until you're 23. Don't get into motorcycles. We have a family history of motorcycle accidents. And don't lie, she says. I took that in really, really deep. She did get a tattoo, a small cursive M, on the inside of her left wrist when she was 28. After high school, Hathaway went to Vassar College for a bit, and then New York University's prestigious Gallatin School of Individualized Study, but never graduated. She got famous instead after the short-lived Fox series Get Real. She landed The Princess Diaries. She made the A-list via the critically loved Brokeback Mountain and the commercial hit The Devil Wears Prada. She also got burned. In addition to the post-Oscar backlash, there was the ex who stole more than $6 million from investors during their 4.5-year relationship. She rebounded and married jewelry designer and producer Adam Schulman in 2012. 4 years later, they had a son, Johnny. Motherhood, she says, was a healing experience. How Johnny is going to feel about himself will have so much to do with how I feel about myself in front of him, she says. If I'm feeling insecure, I am very careful that I don't show that. But I also work really hard to acknowledge that place, give room for that place, and then release myself from that place. I'm more loving now, and that includes toward myself. Through it all, she kept working. Hathaway has appeared in more than 35 films. I was very deliberately, in my 20s, trying to do as many different types of roles as I could with different directors, just to become a better actress, she says. If there was a goal, it was always to just play parts until people were like, oh, she can pull that off. Things didn't always work out perfectly, and she's witnessed the abuse of power firsthand. I've had a 20-year career, and I've had some really, really bad experiences, she says. But I've had a lot of great ones, too, with members of both genders. I can tell she's hesitant to go there on the bad times. While they do not begin to approach the atrocious, galling stories others have shared in recent months, I have had negative on-set experiences, some of a sexual nature, she tells me later. Some are from the beginning of my career. Some are more recent. All are unacceptable. Hathaway is happier talking about the positive experiences and what we can learn from them. There have been many. Serenity with director Stephen Knight was one. He distinguishes himself by always, in every scenario, behaving as though we were two human beings trying to tell the same story. I never felt there was a power dynamic at play. Rather, it was a respectful, artistic collaboration. The same for Matthew McConaughey, Jason Clarke, and the crew. She's using those experiences and the conversations they beget to inform her work with Time's Up. Personally, knowing that a film set could be either harmful or harmonious was one reason she got involved, she says. But it's not just being an actress. Being a 35-year-old cisgendered woman who has experienced the everyday abusive imbalance of the world also made me want to be a part of a movement for change. I know the world can be far worse for others than it has been to me. But I suppose, like most everyone who has been hurt, I want to protect others from going through the worst of what I experienced. I want to help make what I consider the best of my experiences to be the norm, as it always should have been. She's thought a lot about how the abuse could run so deep within the industry. I think that there's got to be some guys who get high off the power. But in a lot of cases, it's an echo chamber. Most guys have never seen anything different. Hathaway is pushing herself to see differently. One thing that I am confronting about myself is my own bias, and the fact that I aspired to be a part of this industry without having to imagine what it could look like if everybody was in it. But if change is going to happen, we have to get uncomfortable, she says. Somebody really brilliant once told me that prophecy is not handed down by DNA. We learn by telling each other stories, And as she segues into producing, she hopes to become a different kind of storyteller. "I'm working on something right now, and I really hope it gets made," she says, with more than a hint of irony creeping into her voice. "It's about multiple versions of truth, and whether or not you can be judged on a moral level by someone who's never imagined what it's like to be you." Right now, however, she's focused on the release of Ocean's 8. Hathaway plays Daphne Kluger, an actress who may or may not be in On a Diamond Robbery with Sandra Bullock, Kate Blanchett, and Rihanna at Vogue's annual Met Ball. It's downright satisfying to watch a group of smart, badass women pull off the heist and not just be the arm candy. I ask whether it feels surreal to play famous person attending Met Ball, an event she's attended many times herself. "I was so excited to get invited onto the team," she tells me. "It was a big, out-of-nowhere offer. I was just like, do not embarrass yourself in front of your heroes. Do not embarrass yourself." She stops talking here, as if to silence critics, including herself. It's the kind of purposeful self-reorienting you might expect from anyone who has been so scrutinized. I bring up the workout video she recently captioned on Instagram. "I am gaining weight for a movie role, and it's going well," which was her way of controlling the fake news cycle. "I didn't feel like dealing with the pregnancy rumors," she says. "I find it bizarre that there's a storm to get ahead of. But I have a history of being shamed and humiliated for a lot of different reasons." Her colleagues have seen her grapple with barriers, too. Sometimes she'll come out with a really good joke, and I'm like, "You should tweet that or put that on Instagram, Annie." And she's like, "I can't," says Rebel Wilson, her co-star in the upcoming comedy, The Hustle. "One Friday I said, I can taste the weekend." And she was like, "Oh, and how does it taste? Oh, and how does he taste?" She comes up with stuff like that all the time. I guess a lot of people don't know that side of her. In our afternoon together, I see glimpses of that Anne Hathaway. She drinks pink wine during the daytime. She slurps a mean oyster. She gets hives on her neck when she's nervous, and is as comfortable name-checking Ryan Gosling as she is David Foster Wallace and feminist author Rebecca Solnit. She keeps a ridiculous photo on her phone of when she was ready to go into labor, and Barbara Streisand rubbed her belly. "I don't have strangers in my life. People don't treat me like a stranger very often," she says. "I've always been really good at diving in. And while sometimes I wish there was a little more distance, I actually really like being able to go there with people right away." And like all of us, sometimes she gets really pissed off. "I have a history with rage," Hathaway says. "I used to do this thing where I was like, I'm nice 29 days out of 30. And then I give myself complete permission to be a bitch to anyone about anything. I realize that if I could actually move away from the judgment and deal with my emotions in the moment, I didn't actually need the extra day. Rage doesn't lead you to a place of peace. And for me, the goal is not happiness. The goal is peace. But peace, like success, is more of a journey than a destination." Kate Blanchett once said something like, "I don't ever want to feel that I've arrived, because as soon as you arrive, you have to leave," she says. "That's the way I've always felt about it. I'm not interested in getting to the top of the mountain. I hope that at the top of the mountain, there's just another mountain." She knows she regresses sometimes and recalls a moment watching the monitor after filming a scene for The Hustle. Chris Addison, the director, saw me recoil and said, "What's the matter?" And I said, "Nothing. I just need a new face," she says. The negativity felt all too familiar. I just had this moment where I was like, ugh, not again. You know where this road leads, and you know it doesn't make you a better actress. So can we please not beat the you-know-what out of ourselves today and just, like, make another choice? And the scene came alive. In the end, all this self-analyzing has just made her better. A better mom, a better actress, a better human. Anne is pretty darn self-aware, says Ocean's 8 director Gary Ross. The thing that struck me most about working with Anne is her bravery. She commits fully to the character, with bravado and no self-protection, understanding that a great performance is never a timid performance. We pay the check and walk the two long blocks to the uptown apartment where she and Shulman and Johnny live when they're not in Los Angeles. Right before she heads back to her life full of fame and contradictions and screaming toddlers and self-criticism, we hug. It's a wrap you up, close friends kind of hug, not timid at all. Justine Harmon is Glamour's features director, the author of this story. Okay, our next story is under the caption, "What's on your mind?" Hashtag live. The conversation. Can a woman and a man really talk about hashtag me too? Get a group of women together over dinner, drinks, or direct message, and hashtag me too eventually comes up. But broach the movement with the men in your life? We're betting you'll hear crickets. It's understandable. It's a brave new era without a rule book. It's hard to know exactly what to say. But for change to happen, we have to start talking. So we partnered with our brother magazine, GQ, to begin having these difficult conversations. We created a survey and sourced answers from more than 1,000 men between the ages of 18 and 55 from all across the country. The results were complicated. Some respondents were skeptical. All this movement will do is stigmatize men and lead to further distrust of women. Others were hopeful. High-powered creeps are already out of jobs. I have no idea how that cannot help. But all were honest. As one admitted, "I work in a kitchen. We are all miscreants. Everything said on the line is probably considered sexual harassment by someone who doesn't work in the industry." Here, Glamour's Justine Harmon sits down with GQ's Benji Hansen Bundy to unpack some of the data and to discuss whether the opposite sexes will ever truly speak the same language. Check out tons more of the data at glamour.com/MeToo. 47% of men surveyed said they had not discussed the movement with anyone. Glamour. "This is what we've been seeing in our personal lives, too. The term Me Too makes men want to run and hide. Why is it so scary?" GQ. "I think the lesson a lot of guys learned very quickly during all the Me Too revelations, myself included, was that this moment called for men to basically shut up and listen for a while. Now it feels like we're in a new phase. It's time to start the conversation about how we fix the big structural problems. I mean, a guy who groped women still got elected president. So everyone has to participate. But I think guys are still a little wary." One guy wrote, "The movement doesn't come across as inclusive to men. To be honest, I feel some of that trepidation too. 38% of men said hashtag MeToo has made them reevaluate their past sexual experiences. Glamour. Looking back on my own past, I'll admit that I wasn't particularly woke in college. I vied for male attention in an almost competitive way. I never called out bad behavior, and I didn't look out for my girlfriends the way I would now. Did the movement make you revisit your own experiences? GQ. Of course. I was in a frat in college, and it wasn't a temple of progressive politics. For a lot of guys, Me Too has been a humbling moment because they didn't realize how extensive sexual harassment was in our society. There's an interesting distinction between my peer group, guys 18 to 34 years old, and older men, 51% of millennials went back to reevaluate their actions, but in the 35 to 55 group, only 28% did. That's not great, but this still strikes me as a positive trend, since it's this next generation that will define the future of harassment and consent. Thankfully, millennials seem to know their SHT, or at least are more willing to figure it out. Glamour. About half of this younger age group said they're worried about being wrongly accused of sexual harassment in the workplace. But the group who had heard of Me Too were less worried, which says to me the movement is helpful in both promoting awareness and modifying behavior. GQ. I think fear might actually be a good thing. It's part of a course correction. The data also shows that younger men are more likely to say Me Too will improve workplace equality, which I think shows that the movement is educating guys on a broader cultural level. 77% of men told us it's a must to get consent during each stage of a sexual encounter. GQ. Well, at the very least, this shows that most men are not horrible monsters. Glamour. But I feel like if I were at a sports bar or a frat, the way I would be treated by men would be different than what our findings suggest. Especially since 50% of guys ages 18 to 34 agreed with this statement. If your partner is willing to kiss you, they must be willing to do other sexual acts. That means Aziz Ansari type scenarios, where the man and the woman are having very different experiences during the same sexual encounter, will continue. GQ. I wish I could say I thought we'd see an immediate reduction in those Aziz type situations, but I think it's going to take time. These stats probably speak to the broader messed upness of our sex education in this country. I'd also say that the discussion seems to be missing a broader examination of human sexuality so far. For example, when we asked, how do you define the boundary between unwanted but harmless advances and harassment? There was this pervading sense of defeat in the answers. One guy said, I feel that there is no line anymore, so you better just keep to yourself. For as long as Western literature has covered courtship, it's almost always the man in pursuit of the woman, with varying degrees of doggedness. Glamour. When one guy said, the principle that I employ is that everyone gets one free pass. When you put your interest out, regardless of how overt or covert the advance was, that is all that you are entitled to. I had to pause. Back when I was single, I would always turn down the first inquiry. A guy had to try at least twice to prove he was actually interested. It was all part of the game. GQ. That's what I mean. It can feel like there's some cognitive dissonance between what it is by the books acceptable and what it actually works and what actually works between two people. It made me nervous to say that out loud. We're definitely opening a can of worms. Glamour, I'm sweating. And our last little segment is hashtag feel. Logan Browning on beauty confidence. The skincare-obsessed Atlanta-born star of the Netflix hit Dear White People and the upcoming horror thriller The Perfection, alongside Girls alum Allison Williams, drops the mic on everything from multitasking to the sisterhood that Time's Up has created in Hollywood. Glamour. You're all about skin. What aspect of it are you the most focused on? Logan Browning. I have sensitive, acne-prone, stress-me-out skin. I get up in the morning and run to the mirror to be like, okay, we're good. Then, before I even leave work, I take off my makeup with Bioderma micellar water. And I use masks as cleansers when my skin acts up. They calm my business down. Also, I notice a huge difference in my skin when I'm taking zinc, omega-3, and turmeric. Glamour. Who are your beauty crushes? LB. My favorite thing to Google is young Zoe Kravitz, to see her on the carpet with her parents. Now you can see that she's really honed in on who she is as a beauty icon, someone who is strong and sexy and always keeps you on your toes. Glamour. It's impossible not to discuss your amazing hair. Some intel, please. LB. I am a diva curl hag. As a curly girl, it took me a long time to find what works. In the shower, I detangle section by section. I use their No Poo Original, Heaven in Hair, and Mix B Leave-In with Archangel Gel. I twist it up in a towel turban and let it air dry because I like my hair to be really big. Then there's a lot of shaking and pulling. Glamour. After years of it straight, why did you start wearing your hair natural? I thought that straight hair made me pretty. And when I was growing up in the South, getting my hair done once a week was a thing. By college, I had never seen it curly. I was curious. I don't even know how to explain the feeling that I get from being a curly girl. There's a whole new personality. Glamour. What would you tell your 13-year-old self? LB, actually, I would really want to hear from her. Have her remind me of what she wanted and what her dreams were. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Anna Kogal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. Make it a great week. See you next time.